300 and more days a year, I toast each morning, lightly buttered, amply coffeed, and clad in the full armor of dutiful resolve, and in a wardrobe that can only be described as acceptable mediocrity. But when August comes, on those mornings when I arise, I am not a thing for human eyes. I hear no duty's moral din, I do not preen nor scrape my chin. I'm dressed in clothes, be well assured, muddied, blemished, and well manured. Oh, sloppy me, oh, crummy eye, a sight that even bums decry. Intent on weeds and cultivation, I'm best unseen when on vacation. And so I was when the saints came dropping by. Not only was I unshaven, uncombed, unkempt, and totally unpresentable, but was sporting a large, wet, muddied spot on each knee from crawling between the rows of my garden, pulling weeds, and sending hapless bugs to their makers, when two young ladies appeared. They were, it turned out, representatives from Zion, missionaries for the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints. Now, Jehovah's Witnesses may grimly trudge from door to door. Southern Baptists may piously plod from place to place. And Hare Krishnas skitter scruffily around airports, but not Mormon missionaries. Like Lewis Carroll's oysters, their coats were brushed, their faces washed, their shoes were neat and clean. They were preppy paragons of piety who, I was sure, had only minutes before stepped sparkling from shampoo and shower into faultless frocks of virginal simplicity, fit to call on the ignorant and uninformed. They gave the distinct impression that there was something about their faith that actually repels dirt. By contrast, I felt like Charles Schulz's cartoon character Pigpen in Peanuts, as we settled down in lawn chairs like beauties and the beast. Not only were they squeaky clean, but they were also perceptive enough to suspect that I did not spend my life crawling around my backyard in that condition, and asked me what I did, meaning, of course, my occupation. I was tempted to say that I was the Presbyterian minister. But not even for the good of our church could I lie, especially not to those two reincarnations of the Virgin Mary. So I confess that I was indeed the local Unitarian Universalist minister. They were fascinated. Fascinated in about the same way I was the first time I ever saw a wild armadillo. It was odd, unattractive, even grotesque, but fascinating. We never did get to Mormonism because they wanted, as they said, to know about your religion. Well, I said, it really isn't a religion as much as it is an approach to religion. People in our church, I explained, use the church as a center for the continual development of their own evolving religions more than as a repository of a once-and-for-all revelation. It's like two different clothing stores, I said. Most stores sell ready-to-wear clothes off the rack, and if you like the color, fabric, cut, and most importantly, if it fits you, you choose it. Most churches are like that. The beliefs and practices, emphases and expectations are hung out for your consideration, and you can take them or leave them. And if you're lucky, the Baptist blouse suits you, or the Catholic coat fits. In our clothing store, I said, hoping they wouldn't take what I was wearing as an example of our religious haberdashery, we don't have racks. Instead, we have bolts of cloth, bins of scraps, shelves of remnants, yarn, needles, shears, thread, pins, and patterns. You have to choose. You can mix and match, cut, stitch, knit, tear out, try this and try that. but we insist that you clothe yourself. The final style, fabric, cut, and product is yours. No better or no worse than the Presbyterian pants or the congregational cardigan you buy off the rack, except that it is distinctly yours. I leaned back, lighted a cigarette self-consciously, not because of my remarks, but because of my cigarette. You know, there's something about smoking in front of young scrub Mormons that I don't experience with Quakers, Seventh-day Adventists, or even hostile non-smokers. Oh, I see, one of them said. She didn't, because she asked, how can you have all those people coming to their own conclusions, altering beliefs to fit their needs, changing their ideas from time to time? What can you ever agree about? I wished I had a cup of coffee, but I thought the cigarettes were enough of an assault on their sensitivities. But being hungry, I was drawn to a new analogy. It's like a restaurant, I said. People choose it because the food is good, but they don't order all the same thing. It satisfies the same hungers, but with different preferences. And yet, I went on, we are all concerned with common hunger and the feeding of that hunger and the sustaining of life, regardless of what we each eat. Now, many other churches are really like that, too, except that they don't admit it. They pretty much serve one thing and ignore the fact that some of their people only pick what's served and then sneak out for a snack. We don't, they said, with the tolerant smiles that indulgent adults often use with children. I know, I said. But what if what people believe is wrong? One of them asked. I knew it was ridiculous to explain, but I did anyway. Saying that there are many levels of right and wrong. It's right to drive on the right side of the road in some countries and wrong to drive on the right side in other countries. Not because it is a cosmic or universal truth, but because it is necessary to have operational rules of the road. On the other hand, it's wrong to take another person's life everywhere in the world because that's something everyone has discovered is true everywhere, even if we don't practice it. On still another hand, I added, sounding as if I were a Hindu deity, what we believe about Jesus, immortality, prayer, and God can be left up to the individual. I thought it best to leave out Buddha, Mohammed, Zoroaster, Karma, Nirvana, and things like that that probably hadn't reached Salt Lake City yet. I could see that my explanation was impossible for them to swallow because they chorused. But those are God's truths. Don't you think God cares? I failed miserably when I countered wittily, oh, I don't think she minds. Theological transsexuality was obviously more than the Bible or the Book of Mormon could accept. Well, I decided to doubly damn myself, so I said, not only do we encourage our people to progressively discover their own beliefs, not impose a set creed, and have no established common doctrine except freedom of conscience and mutual acceptance, we believe that all religions have something worthwhile to say to us, that every historic religion has value, and that no one religion, including our own, has a corner on truth. Which is why we have no missionaries. To illustrate my point, I craftily used Mormon history, recalling how the good Gentile church folk of New York, Ohio, and Illinois persecuted, harassed, even murdered those early Mormons because they believed the Mormons were evil. And even more craftily, I did not mention how Mormons persecuted their neighbors once they became established. I know on which side of my oratorical bread is buttered. They smiled, pleased with my defense of the saints, but could not believe that the same principle applied to Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, and Muslims, and probably not to me either. They finally asked, "Do you believe in the Bible?" Oh, I wanted to say, believe in it, why, I've even seen one. But I didn't. Instead, I told them that we generally regard the Bible as we do the works of Shakespeare, the Hindu Bhagavad Gita, the Mishnah of Judaism, and other great writings, feeling that wherever truth is written, it is sacred. Well, I made no converts with that answer either. So it went on until they went prettily on their way, believing God only knows what about Unitarian Universalists, but leaving me with a few renewed convictions. One, though their coats were brushed, their faces washed, their shoes were neat and clean, oysters are still oysters. Two, though outside a great many churches, not just the Mormon Church, it may be now, but inside it's an awful lot earlier. Three, our kind of church has something unique and I think wonderful to say to the world, even to those who can't understand us. And four, though I was unprepared and unpresentable, I am awfully glad the saints dropped by. They left me happier than ever with my faith.